Hello and welcome to No Directions 2017 Gen Con Seminar Coverage. Special thanks to our Gen Con volunteers, Eric Bring the Knives and Andrew Mullins. For more seminars and other great Pathfinder content, visit NoDirectionPodcast.com.
And so, what are we're talking about?
Ultimate Wilderness.
Oh. Wilderness.
This is the Ultimate Wilderness panel, and it's kind of weird because I feel like we finished that book a long time ago. Probably because in our minds we did.
Because we always have to do it in advance because it goes through editing and layout and printing. And
then it gets on a boat, and then it eventually gets to your store or you order it online.
That's right.
The last time we usually do anything on it is editor questions.
And yes. Then it's...
The editor's like, why did you do this?
It's sometimes copy-fitting, or usually copy-fitting, which is the most fun part about putting together a book.
The editors ask, why did you do this? And we're like, I don't know, that was like 4 months ago.
Or they're like, I don't know, that was somebody else.
Yeah, that one too. So anyway, Ultimate Wilderness is the newest book in our Ultimate line. If you're familiar with our Ultimate line, you know, we pick a theme. One of the things since we were putting together this entire book, we realized, wow, we probably should have done this much earlier, right? And we almost did when we did Ultimate Intrigue.
It was close. Like, Jason brought both of those titles up to a big meeting with the executives, and Intrigue won out by a hair.
Yeah. I mean, it was a hard balance, too, right? Because we knew that druids and rangers and hunters and all of those wilderness classes weren't getting the amount of love that some of the other classes were, and they are all, you know, pretty popular classes. But at the same time, we really had a lot of things we wanted to do on an intrigue-based level to sort of, you know, push the game into another direction.
Because the role-playing and diplomacy and all those sort of charisma-based checks... We didn't really have good rule subsystems for them at the time, and they were a big part of the game, too.
Yeah, yeah. So so when we sat down and we finally decided what we wanted to do, that we wanted to do Ultimate Wilderness, the next step, of course, is to figure out all of the things that we want to put in that book. And it involves starting out with a very long list and kind of paring it down. So like most Ultimate books that you're aware of, it's going to have... new archetypes, because people love new archetypes, new spells, new feats, new magic items, new gear, we also, and of course we're going to give you a new class, because if we don't, you'd just think it was, well, that's weird.
Ultimate Equipment didn't have a new class.
Well, yeah.
Or campaign.
But those were different scopes.
Sure.
Stop pointing out inconsistencies in her brand, Mark. Anyway.
That was back when everything was Ultimate and they almost did Ultimate Race instead of Advanced Race Guide. And
yeah.
It sounded horrible.
Yeah. can I do a little aside on that one?
Because
it's really funny. So the Advanced Race Guide used at one point in time was called Ultimate Races, which if you listen to that...
it's not good.
And I think actually, I know I pointed out, some of us pointed out at the meeting, we're like, are you sure that's really what we want to call it? And then I think we announced it as that at PaizoCon or something.
Yeah, I was at the banquet as a guest, and we all just gasped when it was announced. Yeah. And Eric is like, name change pending,
right.
As soon as he announced it, and we all gasped.
So we renamed it to something that doesn't sound, well, racist. And that's our aside for that story. So, you know, we're into, what year is it, seven?
This 2009 was the core rulebook, right? So 10, 11, 12, 13.
Oh,
you're eight.
I don't want to think. Yeah, all right, anyway.
Or year nine if you count the beta, right?
Yeah.
Yes, year nine if you count the beta.
So, of course, you know, we know we have to put a class in there, or it would look weird. But, you know, what kind of class do we put in this book? You know, quite frankly, thank goodness that, you know, fantasy is a rich tapestry, but it gets harder and harder to come up with good, compelling class design. So we decided very early on that we wanted a martial shifting class, you know, something that if the druid is too complicated or you don't really want to deal with the spellcaster, you know, that you can take this class and turn into giant mauling beasts and have fun at the game table. So that was the original concept, and then I did the initial design, and as I was doing research for it, I realized that we could also have a really great story hook in the fact that you've got these druidic principles in other classes, right? And so when I came in, I'm like, okay, yeah, it shifts like we were talking about, but these are almost like the holy warriors of druidic circles. They speak druidic. They work with druids. They protect sacred guardians. They've got the same sort of restrictions that druids do, and it gave a nice kind of shape to the class that sits in the game world, no matter whether or not you're playing in our campaign setting or you've got a homebrew or whatever. They were very easy to fit in. And then another design goal was while sometimes wild shape can be a little daunting, mostly to new players, and we wanted this class to be a little friendlier to new players that like this idea, but maybe the druid was a little bit daunting. How to do that without invalidating wild shape? There's a lot of feats and abilities, and we wanted the shifter to be able to use those with the standard wild shape, but for them to ease into the process a little more. And so, and that led us to doing aspects, which we kind of lifted off the hunter a little bit, because they were already sitting there. It gave us a nice way to confine what people could do early on and then expand out as they went in level. Yeah.
I think that's about right. So I would say, like, if you're like me, and some people are, you like doing those sort of dumpster dive through six different books and find all the things to turn into. But I found that most people are not like that and do not want to spend hours reading through books to find multiple different forms. And the shifter,
that's not who we were aiming for.
That is not who the shifters aim for. So if you're like that, the druids got you covered already. The shifter, and what I found really fascinating and cool about the design is you don't have to do that. In fact, you can't do that with the shifter. The shifter will get you your form, and you want to be a bear? Great. But it's going to keep giving you more powers for bear instead of finding, like, oh, this 12-armed octopus squid monster has poison and breath weapon.
Right, right. Now, of course,
technically, level 8, this is the best one I can do.
Yeah.
At level 9, I change into a completely different thing and forget those ones before. They suck.
Yeah.
Of course, because it's a new class, it's also got a pretty hefty archetype thing, and that's where we start breaking the rules on the shifter.
Mm-hmm.
So where the theme is still there, but a lot of the archetypes tend to throw out the sort of druidic background, so you can play different flavors of it. One of my favorites that our designer Robert Brooks put together, a freelance designer who's done some great work for us, is an ooze shapeshifter. So if in science fiction, if there's a favorite constable you particularly like, and you would be all like, oh, man, I've always wanted to play that guy. And then it's easy to port over to Starfinder as well. So,
well, and much like him, your base form is just the ooze.
It's just
so
the ooze, yeah.
When you're not concentrating, you might have to sleep in a bucket.
Right. And, you know, and of course, let's see, we've got a lot of archetypes that fit in, you know, to have various classes have a little bit more wilderness themes. I think people really like those. What are your favorites, Mark?
Let's see.
Mark's always got strong opinions on archetypes.
So I think my favorite is the Terra Kineticist, which changes its element depending on which environment it's in. So when you're in the water, you're... your element is water, and when you're in the forest, your element is wood, and then you get a different loadout depending on that, and I'm sure it's going to give Hero Lab fits.
Oh, yeah.
To have to code that. And, in fact, I know
Mark,
for sure...
Mark is Hero Lab's greatest enemy, Lone Wolf.
Well, also, their greatest ally.
Also, their greatest ally. But, no, I announced the archetype at PaizoCon, and the guy who has to do the coding for the archetype set, but Hero Lab was in the panel.
Yeah.
And he, like, stood up and shook his fist at me.
I'm surprised he didn't throw anything at you.
No, because he had already had to apologize for some of the... Just like you said, greatest enemy, greatest ally.
Right, right.
Another one I like a lot is there's a Slayer archetype called Avalancher, and they trade studied target for, instead of studying someone, they fall on you. Like, their main thing is that they will fall on you from higher up. And so the funniest part is, like, the original archetype didn't have this. And I was like, wait a minute, the level 20 ability says you can instantly kill your studied target. I need to swap this out for something. So I swapped it out for Death from Above, where if you fall long enough on someone, they instantly die. Unless they make a fortitude save from the attack.
Does this archetype, do they take falling damage normally? No.
Full
falling damage for all these things.
You take the falling damage too, but if you jump, then you usually don't take falling damage, but still count. If you jump up an amount, it counts as falling that amount, so you can like be a lancer from Final Fantasy or something and leap onto someone and stab them.
The archetype is loosely based off of a friend of ours, or at least Logan and I know him, named Rob Watkins, who has got a bad habit of jumping on people's back, and it does a lot of damage.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Yes. He did it to Jason one time.
Is that where Steve Hell got the idea?
Oh, I hope not.
Okay.
I don't think I want those two in the same room together.
Uh-oh.
That would be, yeah.
Okay. So those are some of my favorites.
I want them in a cage together. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be all right.
We also have some, like, remastered ideas that came from, like, Heroes of the Wild and other wilderness-themed things. One of my favorites is there was an archetype in Heroes of the Wild that was maybe ahead of its time. It was a summoner archetype. It was sort of trying to change the base form of the Eidolon, but it was hard to do that with the APG summoner. So we made an unchained Leshy summoner that summons different forms of Leshies.
There was an underlying Leshy theme of the book.
Funny you mention Leshies.
Are there any other Leshies?
Leshy related.
In chapter one.
The audience really love Leshies.
So one of the things that we also decided to do fairly early, and it's a little bit different for these kind of books, is we wanted to expand the races a little bit, and so we have three new races. Actually, one of them's a very old favorite. Another one's a somewhat old favorite, and the third one is brand new. So we have the Gorn, who, if you want to ever play a delicious plant person, well, you could in the past, but they've got front and center stage in this, and each one of these sections is based on the advanced race guide build. So you get the basic race stuff, you get a group of feats and archetypes and maybe items and spells and everything to expand that race. And so it's got more delicious plant love than you've seen before in other books.
They have full featured race treatment from the advanced race guide. So same format, same length. And yeah, I think isn't there a spell in the Gorn section where you can make it so one of your enemies finds the other enemies delicious and starts trying to eat them? And it's evil. It's an evil spell.
So yeah, we had a little bit of fun with that. The next one is the Gaethling, which first came in the advanced race guide as just sort of an example in the back in the race builder. It is a flying small fae class. So as you'll notice, these are kind of different races than we've put in the core before. We also had to make some executive decisions about some of the stranger immunities that, like, plants, for instance, have. So when you play these things, you're not going to have the broad scope of immunities that you would as most plant creatures. And we explain why, and in a lot of the classes, there are ways where you can get the taste of that immunity without, well, quite frankly, breaking your game.
To give you a behind-the-scenes story, the way it started was I was coming to Steven, who was really taking the lead on a lot of these things. I was like, Steven, I'm putting in these side things into these because there's a bard archetype for the Leshy and a druid archetype for the Goron, but Gorns are immune to wild shaping, so I'm having to put in a thing that says, you're not immune to your own wild shape, you're not immune to your own bard song. And Steven, you were like, why do we have to do that? We can just get rid of these immunities, and then they'll be more playable, both from being able to work nicely with their fellow PCs' positive abilities and with the monsters' negative abilities.
So your GM doesn't hate you for having weird immunities, and you can actually do the things that you would probably try to do anyway because you conveniently forget those immunities because you're having fun playing your character. We could basically cut the Gordian knot with that one and just go, yeah, you're a PC. You live a little bit by different rules. Because as I like to say, you know, we just make this shit up. Right, so we just kind of did that, and we'll have a much more playable race. The third one is brand new, ish, whole cloth.
And it's totally new.
Well, the race is new, but you've seen it before. It is the Vine Leshy, and this is a fully playable PC Leshy. the designed by Linda, who mm-hmm. loves all things Leshy.
She has the form handle queen of Leshy's.
Yes, and and you know, I thought about it giving it to another designer.
He asked for it. I remember on the base camp, Linda was telling the story today to some of the people out there, and she's like, and then Stephen responded in the base camp, Linda will cut me if I give it to anyone else.
Right, yeah, she absolutely would. I don't want to be on her bad side. She's a very sweet person, but I have a feeling if you cross her. so, yeah, and exactly how, you know, in what races were in that section, that took a lot of discussion. But I'm really excited to see what you guys think about doing that. And maybe in further books, we'll expand the races out a little bit more, because races are fun. And even though the Advanced Race Guide has a lot of race fun, yeah, I think there's
we didn't really do it after that. And Advanced Race Guide people liked a lot, so it makes sense.
There's also, this is a really good fit for that, because something like Intrigue, we already had a lot of races that were kind of established as being social. And
sure.
And we didn't have quite as many that had a really strong wilderness theme kind of in there.
Right. Like Kitsune are good at shapeshifting and Intrigue, Infiltration already.
Yeah. You know, Reptoids. And elves are good everywhere. Right.
Yeah, they're even good in the woods, actually.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I hear there's an old shtick that, you know, elves live in woods.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. I heard about that, too. But, yeah.
Yeah, they live in trees and make cookies.
Right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's
right.
That's one of the variant races in here.
Yeah, that's right, the cookie elves.
In the ancient...
It's like the gingerbread witch archetype, and then you get the
right.
Rest of
the gingerbread witch was great from Horror Adventures, but... Yeah. So, in addition to the player options, well,
you're welcome.
Yeah. I apologize to Pathfinder Society. We sent like a whole bunch of
gingerbread witches. I don't think is legal because it eats people.
Okay.
What's wrong with eating? I don't understand.
It has the cook people hex, which is an evil act, and you can't be evil in Pathfinder or something like that. In any case, Wilderness also has a lot of subsystems, just like you've come to expect from Ultimate books. And stuff like the weather system that Stephen wrote, and surviving in the wild if you're doing like a Zelda Breath of the Wild or any of those survival-y style games, like scrounging for herbs, building improvised tools in the wild. And I can tell you, is anyone here running or playing an Iron Fang Invasion game? So I am too. I'm not just raising my hand to get you to raise your hand. And every time I play the game, every session, we're doing something, and the GM's like, well, I don't know what to do for weather. I don't know what to do for this. I'm like, well, if Ultimate Wilderness was out, we would definitely be using that. So it is.
You must be your GM's favorite.
Yeah, I'm his favorite. I was like, yeah, there's something for that in Wilderness. Well, he let Linda play a Vine Leshy.
Oh, well, that's good.
A Vine Leshy Herbalist, which is the wisdom-based Leshy alchemist that throws little Leshy seed pods instead of bombs.
Yep. The narrative exploration thing, I think, is a lot of fun. I like exploration, but I realize that, you know, mileage may vary, and it actually works with our exploration system in Ultimate Campaign as well. They fit together really well. But if you're on the fly and you want to create a good sort of exploration and survival story in the wild, it's a good tool for that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff on foraging and gathering poisons.
Getting monster parts and using them to make magic items that are similar to that monster's magical essence.
Yep. Some of this stuff was sitting in some other sources, some player companions and everything else. But every time we grabbed something like that, we expanded it out. You know, so it, you know, you may have had the original material, but you've just got more of it now. Or we did slight fixes to things that we knew were problematic in the original appearance.
Yeah, and there are some of the systems that had like just lower level stuff.
Yeah.
And we kind of said, all right, how can we expand this to higher
right.
levels so you can,
it'd be like,
you
here's,
keep doing this throughout your adventure.
Here's five low level herbs, and then Logan, you worked on the herb section. We had like, what, like 20, 30 herbs, some of which were super high level in this book.
Yeah, and they're all pretty cool.
Another one we expanded that was a fan favorite was we've collected all of the companion and familiar archetypes that were in all the other books before that, and then I believe more than doubled their number. Mm-hmm. By adding more, including when James Jacobs, who helped us on this book and worked on it a lot, was here at the last panel, and he said his favorite familiar archetype and one of his favorite in the book was the prankster familiar, that they kind of are a bit of a dick to their master, and so like each of their abilities, like they have, you know how you can scry on your familiar normally? They have the ability to put up a false vision effect when you scry on them, so it's like, yeah, I'm working real hard, master, and they're partying out somewhere, and they can...
Oh, I need that ability.
Yeah. And they can spoof the empathic link and do some other... and can play a lot of tricks, and there's... There's some that are sort of like, there's a draconic one that sort of lets your animal companion be descended from dragons and get a breath weapon a little bit, and some that are sort of similar to creature types, and just a lot of cool new stuff for your favorite buddy, whether it's an animal companion or a familiar.
Yeah, there's a sizable chapter that expands animal companions a lot. You know, taking things like what item slots do my companions have? And we worked closely with PFS to make sure, because they were working on a very similar thing, because they were getting questions from their players, to make sure what they needed for the campaign and what they were already saying was lining up with what's in the book, you know, because we like to play nice with others every once in a while. Yeah, it's got animal companions and familiars and lots of them. So if you like those and you liked, what were those two player companions?
The Familiar Folio.
Familiar Folio and
Animal Archive.
Animal Archive, yeah.
But another one, you just reminded me of the animal companions, is that I believe you ordered a bunch of vermin and plant companions as well, because those were never actually expanded from their initial lists. Every time an animal came out in a later bestiary, we'd be like, oh, yeah, and that could be an animal companion. But when a vermin came out, we didn't do that. So we got, like, John Compton and Miko to make a bunch of more vermin and plants and put them in there.
So, yeah. There's a lot of spells. We've got a few new rituals as well. We added those. Let's see. What are some fun spells?
Well, there's the ooze shape change. There's also phase shape changes. Actually, you might think, well, fae are usually not that physically threatening. Why would I want to change into one? And they've got some magic altering effects when you turn into them that can be pretty cool. What else is in there? There's a spell. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I didn't really do the spell chapter. Do you remember any?
It's all a blur now. And then so my favorite add to the spell, and a long time ago, Rob McCurry designed a first level spell called Snowball, and some of you might know that it gets it's got two camps. Well, I'm on the pro Snowball camp. I actually think it's a really great spell, And Rob is a really good friend of mine, and you know, and of course, when you design something and you think you've done a really good job, and people, you know, might disagree with you online, you get a little bummed.
And when you're Rob, especially Rob,
you get really bummed. And I like to laugh at Rob when he's bummed. And you know, and I told him, I said, I think it's a really great spell, and so that's now in the core line because it's still a great spell. It's even got some artwork with it. So
I think Rob's,
take that, haters.
I think Rob's contention is that the spell is fine, but there's a feat that you can use with it that's broken.
Yeah,
I don't even know what that feat is.
I don't remember the name.
I don't think anybody really knows what that feat is. Somebody's going to complain about it.
You know what? And Snowball Swarm, which Rob also made, was totally fine. So yeah, I don't know why people complain about Snowball Swarm.
And then it goes on to gear and magic items. And just like other sections of the book, we've got a good amount of magic items to support the shifter, and also a lot of sort of survival gear. Like you would, you know, like you would expect.
There's
look
a spring-loaded wrist sheath in the core, finally. And it actually, I believe it actually tells you whether you can use scrolls with it or not, which the original spring-loaded wrist sheath did not do.
It's true. Well, it seems like it'd be a little weird to do, that with the scroll. So, anyway, that is the book in a nutshell. Like I said, it comes out this November. I hope you all like it. And I guess right now we're going to open it up to questions and discussion. Yeah. So.
The two-part question. Are you expanding at all in the survival skill and the knowledge nature skill and so on? And if so, did you hurt your right arm field testing them?
We tend not to, well...
Some of the subsystems use those skills,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're giving a basic usage for that skill outside of them.
You know, skills are really tricky because at least the way skills are written, you expand them out with feats and stuff like that. But a lot of times, those feats are just too corner case and they fill too much of a slot. So we tend to put that kind of stuff into subsystems that everybody can use, rather than sitting there and saying, here's a bunch of new general rules for skills. Because some of them, you know, have a lot of uses, and expanding those out in a good and meaningful way is a little bit tricky. So we don't have like a skill section, but a lot of the subsystems do use skills and de facto expand those out. And I just fell down. Not bad balance check. Yeah.
Like you didn't used to be able to use survival to scrounge around and get makeshift tools and like harvest from monsters before. And we didn't just say survival skill, do that. We instead had subsystems and said make a survival check or something like that.
Okay. Kind of akin to how like a vampire could turn into a bunch of bats. Will we see like a swarm archetype of the shifter?
I don't think the shifter had a swarm archetype.
No. Shifter, or swarms are, well, swarms. There was a spell, but I don't know if it made the final cut.
I know there's a swarm monger druid in Blood of the Beast.
Right.
I didn't know if there was one that was just like a martial one that just turns into a swarm.
Well, especially with the shifter trying to be a little more rules light. Doing one that turns them into a swarm is kind of a tricky proposition.
An archetype might be able to handle it, but I don't think any of our archetypes did. We had like an ooze archetype. There's one that's like an out of control beast instead of a more controlled animal. One that like is tainted by the fiendish realms with your animal and some like that. But I don't.
There's also a lot of tricky stuff with like turning into a swarm, and it's like, okay, you know these 18 different rules that apply when you wild shape? Well, these are exceptions that you have to deal with now, and this is what happens to your items. Like, if somebody kills this one, it doesn't, you know, get rid of your gloves that you had.
And then, will we see more kineticist talents outside of the terror kineticist?
So there's a terror kineticist. There's also a kineticist that drains the life force of the land instead of taking burn around them, and uses it to become a towering juggernaut of strength. And they don't have much con. They just have a lot of strength. Or they might have con, but they don't need it. But there are those, and there's a leshy kineticist archetype for the leshy that uses their innate leshy nature to become a wood kineticist. There are not any new wild talents. However, I just said a wood kineticist, and they're not in the core line yet. So how can that be? That's because we brought the entire wood element from all the different books that had wood stuff there. Some of them were hidden in the woodworks. We brought them all together in one book and collected them, and wood is now in the core line, meaning it can show up a lot more often in other things.
Dan, don't tweet that. Don't give him the satisfaction.
Yeah.
Don't let the people know.
How much is common survivalism versus, like, Bay and First World?
Oh, we didn't mention the First World. There's an entire section on the First World in this book. Also on the Green Faith, which we forgot to mention. The Green Faith is the way that Druidism works in Golarion, but it's kind of, if you've ever read about the Green Faith in Golarion, is generic druidy enough that it probably works well for any game's druid group, unless you have a very idiosyncratic group that worships elementals or something. But there's First World, which has some, like, if you remember in Horror Adventures how they had, like, creepy pools and some, like, set piece things that you can encounter. The First World section, if I recall, has some set piece First World hazards and things that you can encounter. More details about the First World, and it'll have it. We have the Fey transformation spells, and so there's a definite Fey sub theme. But I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong because I didn't see all of the sections, but I would say that the wilderness survivally theme is stronger than the Fey sub theme.
Yeah, definitely. We do talk a lot about Fey in there, and I was very excited to be able to talk about the First World as the First World. Because sometimes in the core line, because we've got that divide where we'd like the core line to mostly, and we experiment with this a little bit, to be a good operating system, no matter what world you're playing in, right? We just like to give you a lot of good tools. But that has led us in various parts of the core line to call it the mystic land.
The primal realm of the Fae.
Primal realm of the Fae. And the first world is such a better term for that, but we've also got to kind of explain it to people who may not know. So yay, we can finally kind of use that term in the core. Yeah.
In regards to the shifter, so how the class will work? So at like level one, will you have a pool of animals you can shift into, or do you just pick one at the first level and then get access to more later on?
Excellent question. So you'll pick one. You pick an aspect, and this is your beginning theme. And as you go and you get a minor, not polymorph, but sort of shifting ability. Not only that, you get claws. Everybody gets claws, and because claws are
forever.
Cool. Forever.
At first level.
And a lot of those are based on the hunter aspects as well, and so you'll see some similarities there. They get a slightly better-ish, which let me explain. Then at higher levels, you'll get wild shape. Now, the thing about the aspects and the wild shape is you can add those two things together. And as you go up in level, you'll pick more aspects. And then you can mix and match those things. And so my tongue-in-cheek explanation is, well, if my first aspect was owl and my second aspect was bear, you can become kind of a
you turn into a bear with the polymorph and then use the aspect to add on owl beak and eyes so you can get owl abilities.
Yeah, and as you go up in level, right, so it's for newer players, it kind of eases them in where it's all like at first level I can do this thing that's kind of cool, and then I can mix and match and change things to the situation that I may be in. Some of the aspects are really good for fighting. Some are very good for reconnoitering, and being able to mix and match those. I think folks will find satisfying.
Tiger ox is very good because you have the strength of the ox and the pounce of the tiger.
So it's kind of like a Kung Fu Panda sort of thing.
In some ways, yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie for a good long time.
Yeah, I think you have to multi-class to get the Kung Fu.
Yeah. Yeah, you might multi-class into Monk to get the Kung Fu. But
yeah.
What is the most, I guess, gimmicky archetype? I guess in the horror adventures, I'd probably call either the Living Grimoire or Gingerbread Witch.
So maybe it's the ooze.
Yeah, it might be. The ooze.
It might be the ooze that is like, you are an ooze now. That's your normal form. You have to concentrate to retain your human form.
You know, that's you call it gimmicky. Sometimes I call it sort of odd, low-hanging fruit, right? But, at the same time, people really, really love those things. It's kind of mixing geek culture in a way that folks find fascinating. I mean, when I play Pathfinder or other role-playing games, I tend to do it in my own Stephen flavor, which means he's probably a little bit crazy and evil. But a lot of people love playing kind of mixed up, goofy, or just strange characters. And so
I think it's not like the basic classes aren't gimmicky, right? Like
right.
The swashbuckler is just those guys from those books, right?
The vigilante's clearly Batman.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, Jason even said
he's just a socialite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason even said he would get a dead parent's class ability in the Paizo Clump panel, but that never panned out. Okay.
Let's go over here.
This is my own bias, but sure. One of the things was the bear never felt, from the core rule book for the animal companion, goes from small to medium, never felt that bear fantasy of being a giant bear, wrecking things.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to fix that in this book?
Well, Shifter, how do you like times 3 damage on your claws?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. yeah, It's kind of because, of course, we're designers, and so we're always excited about what we bring out, and then we always have, like, long discussions about things that are in the game that we wish we could go retcon, and we had a big, long conversation about it'd be nice if we could find a way to make animals, especially dinosaurs, because James liked dinosaurs, and every time we do a bestiary, it's like a little bit easier to design and also more distinctive. And so when we do a class like the Shifter, we try to center on those distinctions and push them up a bit. Yeah?
One thing I just thought of, with the Shifter, would that change the race to like an aberration or something like that? You know, tack on like a sub...
No.
Normally, no. The ooze one is a little bit weird, but all the other ones don't.
Yeah, it's the power of druidic training.
I was just thinking it would be.
I did mention we make this stuff up.
Yeah, I just thought it would be interesting. You know, here you are. You go along with your druid training, all of a sudden you become really insane, become an apparition.
Maybe that'll be a new archetype.
Yeah, that could be a new
Or as some people would hear it, oh, I become immune to charm person. And
right. And like I said, we were striving to make this a fun, evocative shifter class. It was a little easier for newer players. And so, change your subtype. All of a sudden, head explodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
One of the things I've noticed with more martial wild-shaping archetypes, like the Mooncursed Barbarian, the Hunter one, is that your AC kind of becomes trash unless you make very specific precautions because your armor doesn't shape with you and you don't get the spells to kind of compensate. Does the Shifter have anything to really kind of compensate for that lack of armor unless you're going out and buying the barding and switching to it every time you shift?
Yeah.
Shift
funny
back?
You should ask.
Yeah. Basically, one of the things that that I did really early was recognizing that as a problem is we stole a little bit from the monk that as long as. And of course, this is a lower armor base class, too, because it's got the same druidic distinctions. And so, yeah, it gets an AC boost based on its wisdom.
Right. It's not at first level, but it's before you get the wild shape issue.
Right.
It has a two-pronged approach that Steven took there. So if you're wearing some kind of min-max full plate or mithril chain shirt, you don't get...
Ironwood full plate.
Or no, but if you're wearing a regular full, something that's not druidic, you don't get anything.
Yeah.
If you wear a traditional druid armor like hide or leather or something, then you get half your wisdom. If you're not wearing any armor or you just wild shaped and you don't have your armor right now, you get full wisdom at that time.
Yep.
So it's sort of a three-pronged approach to your defenses that seemed to work pretty well when I mathed it out.
Yeah, we try to learn from past design.
From the ways PCs have died in the past.
Yes. That's it. We would like to keep your PCs alive or at least give them a fighting chance with a really mean GM.
Are you saying you'd like to give them a really mean GM and then a fighting chance?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Will it be sort of like a kitsune when you have just the aspects where you're just like you're in between form, or is it just like you're this race and then you're the animal?
No, it is like in between form. So you might like be a person with like big giant owl eyes whose head swivels around a little bit and gets some perception bonuses and stuff.
Cool.
And it kind of depends on which way you're transforming, because once you get wild shape, then you can more fully transform.
Then you're an owl.
You have a lot of the time you can be in a kind of hybrid form.
Yeah. You're that freaky guy at the party where everybody's like, watch what Joe can do. So.
Oh, God.
I think I heard you say that the new phase-shaped polymorph spells you mentioned can enhance the caster's magical abilities rather than their physical ones. Can you expand on that at all?
I want to say this exactly right, so make sure I get this right, but I believe if you are doing a spell that is on the spell-like ability list of the fae that you turned into something happens.
Yeah. Basically, it since a lot of fae have spell-like abilities, and sometimes we just basically wanted to make you better at that while you were at while you were in that form.
Is that a hand up? Go ahead, you had it up before the other people.
I want to know if there's going to be any quality of life support for the animal companions and the familiars because of how many there are across different books. Do you have like a medium of a chart or something like that?
A chart that has everything that has ever been printed? We don't have that.
No. although that might be something to put on the website.
The closest thing to that that exists right now is actually Pathfinder Society's adjunct to the thing that Stephen was talking about, where they put up a blog that made official Pathfinder Society rulings for every familiar and animal companion you can get in Pathfinder Society, which is not all of them, because some of them are kind of busted and are not allowed in Pathfinder Society, or are evil and you can't get them because you can't be evil.
Well, you know, no one's perfect.
In terms of environs covering this, is it just forest-aimed or also desert, tundra?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything, but I would say...
It's not a city.
I would say slightly lower for underwater than other things, because Aquatic Adventures just came out and we would be picking up something from like several months before. So, but there's still some underwater, just not as much as the other different environments.
So you mentioned you're expanding on the familiar archetypes. One of the things that some might see as an issue, some might see as, yeah, no, that makes perfect sense with the existing ones, that except for one, you can't stack them from proof familiar. Did you take that in mind when you were designing them and either double down on it or try and make it a little more open to the proof familiar list?
So I wrote the intro to the familiar archetypes section. I took a cue from Stephen's intro to archetypes in Advanced Class Guide, where a book that was four books into archetypes, where Stephen finally got down some really good guidelines on what happens with archetypes, how they stack, and how all the abilities work that most people don't even know about. I bet when you open it up and read it, you'd be like, I thought that was just the same intro from before. I didn't read it, but it was different. So I put an intro for familiar archetypes that, as far as I know, since I also designed the original familiar folio familiar archetypes, and so I watched the threads of people being like, does this work with this? How does this work? It should answer all of the outstanding questions and try to explain it better than we did before.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of weather and weather rules, and I've been playing for a long time.
Even in Indiana, in Indianapolis right now, are you a fan of the weather?
I like having an atmosphere. Yeah. No, actually, I'm not. But I've always loved weather rules, and it always seems like it's one of the things that's been a missed opportunity in almost every system ever. Usually it's like a single table. I'm just wondering how robust. You mentioned that there's some weather stuff in there.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Nobody put any work into that, so.
It's not like someone just immediately was like, yes, weather, and then grabbed the weather section.
Right, right.
Assigned it to himself.
Certainly nobody at this table.
So so one of the things, you know, and it's funny. So I am good friends with Kim Mohan, who wrote the original weather tables in back in Wilderness Survival Guide. And we were having this conversation, and he's like, oh, Stephen, why are you doing this? And I'm like, oh, somebody had to do it. So one of the things that I really tried to do with that system is to make it as robust as possible while as simple as possible. And so a lot of it is just like, where is your location? You know, is it on the coast? Is it in this temperate zone? And just sort of, and I've even got weather for underground too, right? Which deals with that as well. So I wanted very few dice rolls, something that was as quick as possible while having things be as robust as possible. So it's got many tables. But hopefully I designed them so you can go through them quickly, especially after you've read it, and come up with some... I try.
He's laughing because I used to have legal pads when they go on like a 20-day trip. I'd have the weather for every single day.
Yeah.
Well, now...
For that dust storm.
Right.
Now you can count on Stephen for that dust storm.
Yes. And I've got like a lot of special crazy weather things, including firenados and all sorts of crazy crap that you can put in there. So I'm hoping you will find it robust. Once you read it, feel free to let me know what you think.
I thought the chance of fire needles should have been higher. One every 2 days.
Yeah, you guys need to get Sirenscape to make sound effects for something.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
Fire needle, that'd be awesome.
On the subject of weather, thank you for bringing it up. I'm running a homebrew. Mm-hmm. One of the themes of my homebrew is that my world has a very erratic orbit. And so every year, the druids and sages all have to get together to try and figure out
whether or not next year is going to suck, and so in what way?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Cold, hot, you know.
Fire NATO.
Ridiculously hot. Yeah. And so do you think that the weather system that you've come up with is going to be amenable to
You know, the funny thing about it is I do kind of warn people in the beginning that I based it on Earth, and just by changing what you roll and when, you know, or what the frequency is, you can probably change the weather patterns pretty drastically based on your own world and how that works. You know, thank you, Game of Thrones, for making me think about that, because a lot of people like to fool around with that sort of thing. So as the base system, and again, this was a design goal of mine, it's the base system, maybe not, but the components are in such a way that I think you could modify it very easily to do exactly what you want to do.
Cool. And did you have, like, the bad shit near the bottom or the top? I can't remember which side of the chart. So, mm-hmm. like, I think if it's at the bottom, if it is, that would mean that if the druids say, this year sucks, then you, like, add 10 to the D100 yeah. roll or something like that, and it increases the chance of the bad stuff he had at the bottom of the chart or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be very convenient. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was a fan of when you guys released the alternate classes, and I was wondering if you have any ideas or maybe if they will appear sooner than that.
I think the alternate classes kind of sit in a weird spot that where it's not an archetype and it's not entirely its own class. I think we've been kind of avoiding doing a whole lot more of them just because a lot of people give us the feedback that's kind of like, we don't quite know what to do with these. So we've kind of gone easier on them and tried to either sort them into the archetype or the full class model.
Yeah, people have been having trouble adjudicating them in their games because of the fact that there's some, like Ninja, that is so close to the rogue that it kind of would want you to be able to use some rogue things probably. But there's some, like Anti-Paladin, that if a feat said Paladin 8 could take it, and Sacred Love of Everyone, you probably don't want the Anti-Paladins to have it. And we don't have an exact ruling that says whether our alternate classes can take thing that requires the original class, then people aren't sure, and you can be more sure if you make a new class or an archetype.
Well, if you look at the advanced class guide classes, they're a little more like kind of the same concept as alternate classes, but done as a full class, so we can be a little more precise about what they can and can't do.
Okay. I was just thinking like in opposite, since we're all talking about ultimate wilderness, something that's very much like Artificer or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ultimate Intrigue was sort of Ultimate City and socialness. I would say that the Occultist, and maybe the Occultist Talisman Crafter could be good, Artificers. The Psychometrist Vigilante archetype is a Gadgeteer Vigilante. And there's also in Inner Sea Intrigue, yeah, that's the one you were talking about. There's an Alchemist Artificer that builds a construct, like Clockwork Construct. So there are a few Artificers scattered about.
Okay. Yeah, this is an argument that actually I love to have with Jason, but he doesn't like having it with me. Is I'm like, yeah, classes are just classes. It was the discussion we had with the hybrid classes, where very early on I'm like, yeah, I know you got this hybrid thing, but it's got to stand on its own as its own class. And I think in a lot of ways, alternate classes were a good idea, but it's much harder to support them. And it would have just been easier if we said, yeah, it's just a class. I don't know what that alternate is really doing to serve us.
Don't expect them in the future.
Probably.
Not likely.
But unless I don't show up to that meeting and get that argument.
And then Jason's like, we have 5 new alternate classes. Right.
There might be some that are conceptually in that
niche,
but just won't be called that.
Right.
Picking up on the hybrid classes, are there any plans for additional hybrid classes to be made in the future?
There are always plans. Whether or not they see reality just has to do with, you know, what...
Which ideas catch fire and books?
Yeah.
Which books are we looking at doing?
There aren't any in Planar Adventures or Ultimate Wilderness.
Right.
I was thinking more on lines like a barbarian monk. That would just absolutely be
No, that would be fun.
Kind of cool.
All right, well, let's
let's put that on the list.
Write it up. Yep.
Key rage.
Yeah, you bleed off key points as you go into a bigger and bigger rage, activate your chakras.
I mean, the Drunken Master is sort of like that.
A little.
Yeah.
You could be Drunken Master, Drunken Brute, Barbarian Multi-Class.
Rage points. These are my rage
points.
That's
actually how I got that. No.
So you mentioned you were doing both more animal companion archetypes and familiar archetypes.
Yes.
I listed a couple of familiar archetypes. What are some of the animal companion archetypes?
So Draconic was an animal companion archetype. There's one where you like tried to raise your companion from the dead, and they came back a little different, and they have touched by the undead. That's one of the ones. Let's see. There's one that's sort of like a bully that is like from one of the animals. Because some types of animals like beat up other animals for dominance a lot, and that animal like likes to intimidate and push other animals around. There's a lot that help animals fill like a particular niche, like bully, that are more like the ones from Animal Archive. And there's some that are like sort of like a creature type. There's like a fae-ish one that. You have to pick one that starts at small and it doesn't go to medium. The time when you can choose to go to medium or take the other stats, everyone chooses to go to medium, but it gets extra benefits for staying small constantly.
So you say that, when they don't go to medium, they actually get terrified of the natural animal.
There are some things you can do, but I think most people take their animal companion up to as large as possible with some ungodly reach and then pounce.
All right, we got a few more minutes, so let's do a couple more questions.
I know you guys mentioned earlier at the how you really love the story hook with the shifter. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could tell me anything about the iconic character for this class or anything story-wise with it.
Well, her art has been revealed at the PaizoCon banquet. I think it was plain to see in that art that she had bird-like talons and was clearly going to be some kind of bird. Which would generally
bird,
be...
A bird aspect.
Yeah, it would generally be one of the bird aspects, such as the owl or the hawk, or one of those. Okay. If you looked at her skin tone, it was a little bit darker than pale, so there were a lot of different theories on the internet about which ethnicity from Golarion she was. We haven't known what that is, but it hasn't been announced yet, we won't tell you.
When will it be announced?
Crucial. Those usually get revealed in the Meet the Iconics blog, and so... I'd have no idea when they're going to put that up. Probably sometime in the next few months.
Yeah, and as usual, her illustration is done by Wayne Reynolds, and she's going to appear on the cover.
Yeah. So, and a fun story is we actually, when we were talking about the Iconic, we had just happened to have Wayne in town, and he came and talked in this meeting, and I was explaining the class, and people were spitballing ideas on what the Iconic could be, he was sketching something else, and then he goes into his phone. He goes, "Oh, you mean something like this?" And we didn't end up using that art, but it was really close. And I'm like, "Can we just do that?" And it was something he put together for.
He had like a bear project. One.
He had a bear one. A bear
then,
one.
Then people were like, "Do we want a bear?" And then it got workshopped around, and people wanted a bird. And so, but we were like,
"It happens a lot." Paizo's like, "What if we did the weird thing?"
Yeah. And, you know, there's still part of me. I'm like, I wish we went with the bear lady.
I kind of like the bear person, too.
But at the same time, you know, we've worked with, Wayne.
You'll all have to make your own bear ladies at home.
Yeah. It was that sounds... Never mind.
Yeah.
Characters.
Anyway.
Don't like trying to...
Bear the animal. Bear the animal.
Yeah.
I'm not going to judge.
But yeah, it's always a joy working with Wayne because no matter what kind of weirdness you throw at him, his work is so good that by the time you're like, okay, yeah, no, that's great, Wayne. Just keep on doing that, man.
It's like, this is exactly what I wanted, and I didn't know I wanted it until you showed it to me.
All right, last question.
Going back to what you're just talking about, how often does the art end up influencing how you do things as designers?
Oh, that's not as often as you would think. And one of the reasons is we get to write the art orders. So in a lot of ways, we get to tell kind of the artist what to do because we have the bully archetype.
Wing concepting is a little bit different, but especially with a lot of classes, they need to encompass so many broad concepts. It's like, we were going to do a bird one somewhere.
Right.
So it's like... It didn't mean that we added a bird when we weren't going to at all.
Yeah.
But it did mean that
There are a few times. Sajan the Iconic Monk had some kind of weird temple sword, and there wasn't one in the core rulebook, so they quickly got a temple sword out because of Sajan. Also, a lot of our artists like to draw the spell manifestations that would appear when you cast a spell, even if it wasn't a fireball.
Right, because we have to try to describe in an art or how magic looks.
And we also had a problem in that spellcraft said that you could see the spell with your eyes, even if it wasn't a fireball, even if it was something that didn't seem visual. So we were like, oh, well, yeah, it's exactly like the artists are drawing on the manifestations.
There's glowy stuff.
So we were inspired by how they represented it to explain how the spellcraft spell worked.
I think there it happens a lot more with like new games because like for Starfinder they're doing a lot of concept art and usually like in the middle of an edition you don't do a whole lot of like new concept art for stuff. It's usually these are all established things and put these into art.
So it'd be like
Mavaro might be another good example though because for the occultist is like Wayne's gonna draw a whole bunch of stuff on him. It's like and because the class is all about items, it's like he should have those as options. So it does happen from time to time.
All right.
Yep.
I think that's it for us because it's 1:56. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everyone.